we have a fiscal system that offers an excessive amount of front-end credits for exploration, at the same time taking too much in the out-year production.
Lawmakers look at ways of revising the oil tax structure. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, December 9th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, UAF officials seek guidance for the next century of education.
Let's have 20 or 30 of these public meetings all over the state and then pile all these answers in stacks and see which ones are the biggest and go after them.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. And by the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
Governor Sean Parnell is proposing $4.9 million for emergency food supplies to be stashed across the state. Parnell says his administration is working to ensure every community is prepared with power generation, safe drinking water, and food supplies in case of an emergency or natural disaster. His office says $4.5 million was previously secured for emergency power and water purification to aid in the readiness effort. The request will be part of Parnell's fiscal year 2013 budget plan, which he's set to unveil next week in Anchorage. Parnell also wants $3 million for a helicopter equipped for use by Alaska State Troopers in remote areas in adverse weather. In the legislative session that begins in January, members of the House and Senate will face several high-priority issues, but at the top will be whether to change the state's oil tax structure to encourage more new production. Based on the high prices paid earlier this week for leases on the North Slope, there is evidence of renewed interest from possible producers. And lawmakers are now looking at their options. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
The Spanish oil company Repsol recently showed up in Alaska, looking around the North Slope to see if this is where they wanted to focus their future exploration. They had been heavily invested in South America, Argentina particularly, but Argentina had a tax structure that, like Alaska's, takes a high percent of the income as oil prices increase. Repsol drew the line there when they were in a position that there was no reason to make new investment. 100% of the price above $60.90 a barrel went to the Argentine government. Alaska looked good in comparison. Legislators have just finished 2 days of seminars with international petroleum consultant Pedro Van Meurs, who helped put together the tax regime that passed under Governor Frank Murkowski. The state's current plan that passed under Sarah Palin is an amendment of that. Anchorage Republican Mike Hawker says Van Meurs presented some options to the current tax plan that he says could result in putting 1 million barrels of oil a day through the Trans-Alaska pipeline and could create a tax structure that would make Alaska's natural gas economically viable in Pacific Rim countries while still giving the state a good return. It's not the overall tax rate that needs to be cut. Hawker says it's just the balancing point that needs to change.
We have a fiscal system that offers an excessive amount of front-end credits for exploration, at the same time taking too much in the out-year production in the form of ongoing production taxes. His proposal is very much a rebalancing of our system, lowering the amount of front-end benefit and at the same time lowering the amount of government take in the out-years.
Hawker says Governor Parnell has privately expressed an openness to new ideas and amendments to his bill that's now under discussion. That current tax-changing legislation passed the House earlier this year, but was not taken up by the Senate, and there were a lot of problems raised there. However, Senate Finance Co-Chair Bert Stedman, who has taken a seminar with Van Meurs in London, says he anticipates a better reception this year, and he sees the same alternatives as Hawker does. The problem comes when oil prices are high, within ranges the state has seen in the past few years.
But when you have oil prices at $130, $140, $150 a barrel, there isn't enough sharing of that increase in gross dollars to the industry. Basically, it all goes to the state, pretty much. So we've got to work on that. And then there's problems with our credits. And the credit is where the state reimburses part of the capital cost, 20 to 40% of the capital cost.
The governor's idea of simply reducing the oil taxes became a divisive issue during the last session. However, going into next year's session, there is some agreement, at least in principle, with the need for change. Anchorage Democrat Berta Gardner supports what she calls tweaking the system. She says Van Muir has documented where the state's tax regime has its good and bad points.
Our credits might be too generous, unnecessarily generous. In fact, he said they're probably the best in the world, and it's not necessary. But at the same time, at the higher levels, particularly for the more expensive to produce heavy oils and things like that, we may need to make some adjustments. And the other thing that was sort of a takeaway for me is that what ACES really does is it's wonderful for the explorers and not necessarily quite so wonderful for the producers.
When Repsol began to look at Alaska from its Spanish offices, it tried to hire fiscal consultants to explain the state's tax structure. Van Muir says they were unable to find any accountant who would take the contract. Alaska was far too confusing. Gardner says that confusion is part of the reason that there's not enough audited information on which to base decisions. Hawker says that's another goal for the state. Simplify the rules. Stedman, Hawker, and Gardner anticipate the issue of oil taxes arising at the very start of the session that begins in January. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
Conservation is a better means to reducing U.S. dependence on foreign oil than drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. That's the message of a report commissioned by the Alaska Wilderness League and the Northern Alaska Environmental Center. Report author, oil industry analyst Richard Feinberg of Fairbanks cites Federal Energy Information Service forecast numbers, which predict U.S. foreign oil imports declining by 46.9 billion barrels through 2030. Feinberg says the power of conservation is being underestimated amid a pro-drilling frenzy brought on by high oil prices.
If our concern is dependence on foreign oil and the economic effects of paying $100 per barrel, the numbers show that we get much more out of reduced energy consumption.
Feinberg cites Federal Energy Information Service data that shows U.S. oil imports have declined from 12.9 million barrels per day in 2005 to 9 million a day at present. Federal prosecutors who tried the late U.S. Senator Ted Stevens in 2008 have lost an appeal against a contempt of court citation. U.S. District Court Judge Emmett Sullivan found the prosecutors in contempt in February of 2009 because they had not made certain documents available to Stevens' attorneys. Although Sullivan lifted the citation and did not apply penalties, U.S. Justice Department attorneys Brenda Morris and William Welsh appealed, saying the contempt finding was procedurally improper. But today, the U.S. Court of Appeals disagreed and upheld the citation. Stevens' 2008 conviction on corruption charges was overturned because of the prosecutor's mishandling of the case. Stevens died a year later in a plane crash. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the spotlights on Talkeetna bachelors at the annual auction.
I've never felt more objectified, if that means anything. I felt very objectified. I mean, they're out there. They're out for blood.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. And by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The hearing into a Coast Guard pilot's alleged negligence is over. The Article 32 proceeding wrapped up this afternoon in Juneau after the last round of witnesses. Lieutenant Lance Leone is the only survivor of last year's fatal Coast Guard helicopter crash off the coast of Washington State. From Juneau, KTOO's Matt Miller has this report.
Friday morning, some of the pilots that Leone flew with in Sitka and Elizabeth City, North Carolina, testified to his skills and professionalism. A Federal Aviation Administration official said that he would have likely recommended better warning measures for a set of power lines near La Push, Washington, had he been called in to evaluate the site. Leone's H-60 helicopter flew into the lines and crashed in July of last year. His defense says the wires were poorly marked as hazards to aircraft. The pilot at the controls of the H-60 was Lieutenant Sean Kruger. He was killed in the crash, along with aviation maintenance technicians Adam Hoke and Brett Banks. Government counsel or Coast Guard lawyers serving as prosecutors said that Leone showed no reasonable duty of care as navigator and co-pilot of that flight. Leone's civilian defense counsel said the U.S. Coast Guard set a trap that was spring-loaded and that had already worked twice before. The power lines are owned and operated by the Coast Guard, and they've already been implicated in at least two other accidents. Captain Andrew Norris, who led the Article 32 hearing, says he'll consider an additional charge of dereliction of duty against Leone. Norris was already investigating him for one count of dereliction for failing to navigate the helicopter to avoid hazards. Leone is also charged with destruction of government property and negligently causing the deaths of Hoke and Banks. The new dereliction charge is for not following proper crew resource management procedures. It follows testimony on Thursday from Leone's commanding officer, Air Station Sitka Commander Doug Cameron, who suggested Leone may have been reluctant to question Kruger as the helicopter's pilot in command. Cameron speculated that Leone deferred to Kruger because of rank and experience. The Article 32 hearing, similar to a grand jury proceeding in civilian court, began on Wednesday. Formal motions and one last piece of written testimony will be considered on Monday, and then Norris will make a recommendation to Rear Admiral Thomas Ostebo, a commander of the 17th Coast Guard District in Alaska. Ostebo will decide whether to drop the charges, pursue discipline internally, or through a court-martial. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
A Houston man has been taken into custody for threatening a state trooper, among other charges. Kenneth Champ, who owns Champ Septic Pumping, is also under investigation for allegedly dumping raw human sewage into a creek that runs near his property. In September, state troopers investigated a complaint by one of Champ's neighbors that he was dumping raw sewage from his pumping trucks into a creek. Trooper Matthew Heeran went to Champ's property to investigate. Champ did not allow the trooper into his trailer. Champ then called 911 and told the operator he had a gun and was going to shoot the trooper. Heeran left the property unharmed. Later, troopers and State Department of Environmental Conservation staffers went to Champ's property to collect water samples in the sewage investigation. Samples were found to contain dangerous levels of fecal coliform. On a follow-up visit, officials searched outbuildings on the property and discovered a marijuana growing operation that had 1,700 plants. Troopers also found firearms and more than $18,000 in cash in Champ's trailer. Champ was arraigned in Palmer yesterday for assault of a police officer. Drug charges and environmental charges have not yet been filed. Fairbanks area residents got a chance recently to add their voices to a planning process launched this fall by University of Alaska President Pat Gamble. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, the aim of the project is to set a course for the university over the next 100 years.
Just over 5 years from now, Alaska's university system will mark its 100th anniversary. And to prepare the state's colleges and universities for their second century, Gamble has launched a process he's called Shaping Alaska's Future 2017, which invites Alaskans to talk about the university system, especially how it's doing and what it needs to do better. Chaz St. George is a strategic direction coordinator with the university's Office of Academic Affairs in Anchorage. St. George says the listening sessions held so far in Matsu, Southeast, and the Aleutian Islands campus reflect the diverse needs of a system with 34,000 students in 16 campuses scattered around the state. St. George says there are a few universal themes that seem to come up every time, like the need for the university to prepare students for the workplace and the need for more distance learning to accommodate Alaskans who live in remote areas far away from the main campuses.
Common threads are the importance of the university as an economic engine in their communities, the gaps that are how can we do a better job of distance delivery, because that's a huge benefit.
Jenna Edmiston, the chief nursing officer at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, says she thinks one thing the university should focus attention on is improving UAF's nursing program so that it better prepares its graduates to continue on from a two-year degree to a bachelor's degree. Edmiston says that's a growing healthcare industry trend that UAA's nursing program has done a better job at accommodating, and that puts UAF nursing graduates at a competitive disadvantage.
And we do not want to short our local students by not being able to hire them because they have associate's degrees, and that's what we're producing.
After the meeting, Gamble says he appreciated the many observations shared in the Fairbanks sessions, as well as those in previous meetings. Gamble says that preparing the university system for its second century must begin with listening to what Alaskans have to say.
Let's have 20 or 30 of these public meetings all over the state, and then let's turn around and ask our faculty and ask our staff and ask our students the same kinds of questions. And then pile all these answers in stacks and see which ones are the biggest and go after them.
In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Technicians have temporarily repaired the rudder of a 656-foot cargo vessel, Morning Cedar. The vessel was en route from Vancouver, Canada to Japan with a load of packaged timber when a hydraulic leak left it without steering. It's been adrift in the western Bering Sea north of Adak since Monday. Both the crew and the Coast Guard tried to fix the rudder without success. The Morning Cedar's parent company contracted specialists from Norway and Washington to fly out and attempt repairs. The Coast Guard airlifted the technicians from Adak to the vessel last night. The fix is only temporary, so the ship is headed for the port of Dutch Harbor for more permanent repairs. The Coast Guard cutter Sherman will accompany the vessel into port. They're expected to arrive on Sunday afternoon.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. Support for AK comes from the Federal Aviation Administration setting standards for the operation of aircraft in airports. FAA.gov/go/flyalaska or toll free at 1-866-357-4704.
Ketchikan, Kotzebue,
Dillingham, Sitka, Chugiak,
Fairbanks, Fort Yukon, Wrangell,
Barrow, Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Aleknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Lori Neufeld. This week on AK, the most famous auction in Alaska. The 31st annual Talkeetna Bachelor's Auction had another full house when more than 240 ladies packed into the Sheldon Arts Hangar last weekend. 40 of Talkeetna's finest eligible bachelors were auctioned off and raised over $9,000 for women and children in crisis. KTNA's Loria Nettleton, an eligible bachelor himself, got the inside scoop on all the action.
I came to Talkeetna from Fairbanks in October to do news at KTNA and had to start the process of learning the names and faces in this town of 400 souls. After making introductions, the second thing nearly everyone said to me was, "You will, of course, be in the auction." This was not so much a question as a statement of fact. The Talkeetna Bachelor Auction began as a way to bring women to town, and for 31 years has turned its proceeds over to help women and children in crisis. Everyone I talked to said it is the best party of the year. Bachelor Society Board President Todd Bazalone has been in the Bachelor's Auction for 13 years.
The Shelter for Women and Children in Crisis is, you know, our main charity, and it's a big party that everybody has fun at, especially the women. I mean, you've never been to it, and anybody that hasn't been to it, you're in for a shock. I think, you know, how much fun it really is, because the only people in the audience are women, and people let loose.
I decided I might be able to say the three words no journalist should: I'm for sale, and signed up. I set some clear ground rules for the weekend. Number one, no lady was getting to first base. Number two, I would make no proposals of marriage. When the night finally arrived, the anticipation was the worst part. At 7, the bachelors were brought into the auction house to be introduced to the ladies as a group. With a wall of men as a backdrop, the winner of the Wilderness Woman's Contest, Emily Bernhardt, was crowned with a wolf fur hat and a gold nugget necklace. Remember that second rule? The one where I swore I wouldn't propose?
Marry me, Emily!
I'm confident she'll say no. No guys are allowed in the building unless they're getting auctioned, so the bachelors had to mill around outside and wait until we were called. We were herded 5 at a time into a cattle chute of sorts to wait like lambs for the slaughter. Joseph Nerlfi had just finished getting auctioned, and I asked him how he did.
Well, it wasn't as traumatic as I thought it was going to be. I kept a cool head and tried to, you know, just do a little vamping for the girls, and it worked out.
A lot of attention.
Yeah, definitely. Women. Yeah, oh, certainly. I've never felt more objectified, if that means anything. I felt very objectified. I mean, they're out there. They're out for blood, so.
As a man who's offering himself for sale to the highest bidder, each bachelor has to consider his presentation. In line in front of me was 6'5" dog mushing hay mowing horse pack guide from Fairbanks, John Hogberg.
Well, I'm going to walk up there and just do what comes to me.
You rehearse?
No, I'm strictly off the cuff kind of guy. Yeah. I make up life as I go along, but try to learn from the past and have an expectation for the future.
Have you done the auction before?
Never.
Good feeling, waiting here next to the door, ready to go out there, huh?
The women are getting wild. Looks like the clothes removal is the thing that really works them up.
When Hogberg got called up, I couldn't see what was going on from behind the curtain, but I could hear his booming baritone as he serenaded the ladies with the bare necessities. That's one tough act to follow.
Parts acting a little funny.
Then it was my turn on the auction block.
Not feeling so great.
Out of the way, ladies!
I strutted, I sang, tried my best to work the crowd, and I kept my clothing on. Before you know it, I was sold.
This is a cheap date.
What's your name?
Jane.
Jane. Why'd you buy me?
It's tax deductible.
Did you catch that? She didn't buy me because of my charm or for my looks. She bought me because I'm cheap and tax deductible. If you're curious to know the purchase price of a news reporter, well, a gentleman never tells. The bachelor's ball that followed was an incredible dance party, and single ladies shrieked through the streets of Talkeena until the early hours. The girls were all still in town Sunday morning, so I paraded the slushy streets on a gentleman's mission to put a tender love song in the heart of every girl I saw.
Just one look, and I fell so hard, hard in love with you. Oh, oh, I found out how good it feels.
What's your name?
I carried on like this until I lost my voice. Over the weekend, 43 bachelors were sold to raise over $9,000 for women and children in distress. Hearts were ignited with the possibility of true love for sale. Most everyone managed to stay out of trouble, although we flirted with it heavily. If any ladies happen to slip out of town with a heart stolen during the bachelor auction weekend, we're begging you, bring them on back anytime. From Talkeetna with love, I'm Lorian Nettleton.
And now a trip to the most far-flung community in Alaska. Adak is near the end of the Aleutian chain, farther west than Hawaii. It's an old Navy base that is in the middle of a revitalization.
My name is Leighton Lockett, and I'm the city manager for the city of Adak. We're 1,200 miles southwest of Anchorage. We're on the very tip of the Aleutian chain. Actually, we are the southernmost community in Alaska and the westernmost city in the United States. The most exciting thing happening in Adak is Icicle Seafoods is reopening the fish plant that was closed several years ago. And we expect that they'll be able to start processing in January for what we refer to as the A season, and start bringing several hundred people out, we expect, and hopefully growing the community, the economic base, you know, so that the store has a lot more business. We see a lot more people on the plane, as well as seeing restaurants open up again. Right now, the only restaurant that we have is part of the bar that we have here, which is open at night. And we have a little taco stand type of restaurant. but that is looking to expand, as well as the fish plant will open its own restaurant. And there's been talk that someone might start a bakery again. So we might go from one restaurant to four overnight. We are working with the Aleut Corporation right now, actually their subsidiary, Aleut Real Estate, on a water exporting deal where we hope to sell water to Southeast Asia. So we're working on that right now with them. There are several hundred houses that are not habited right now. Of course, they were built for the Navy, which had 6,000 people at its in the late, I think the early to mid-90s. It almost looks like a ghost town. There are people who have mentioned that we would be a good site for a horror film, which actually we've received a few phone calls about from studios inquiring as to maybe coming out and filming something on ADAC. The nice thing about living at ADAC is we have great facilities that the Navy left us. In fact, the main community building is a high school that was finished in 1993. So that's where City Hall is, and the community room and the clinic. So the downtown core, as we call it, is full of all of these buildings and facilities that make it feel like you're still part of a larger community.
Leighton Lockett is the city manager of ADAC. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK This Week. We had help this week from Lorian Nettleton in Talkeetna and Dave Waldron in Anchorage. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Lori Neufeld.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Matt Miller in Juneau, and Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our guest host for AK this week was Lori Neufeld. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, which has been providing quality health plans to companies and individuals in Alaska for over 60 years. More at Primera.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. We know the territory.
And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline with over 700 employees.
The Federal Aviation Administration sets standards for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, so when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message sponsored by the FAA.
You can find APRN headlines from around the state online at alaskapublic.org. There you'll discover local and worldwide news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. alaskapublic.org, connecting you to Alaska one story at a time.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.